One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey, howdy, friends, and thanks for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives. It's me, guys. It's me, Cam Hale, and joining me, as always, mi amigo over here, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Hope everybody's having a great beginning of the week.
Yeah, if everybody for here in the U.S., I hope y'all only got like a four-day week. I hope they give you off Friday.
That's right, yeah.
That's what I hope happens.
We're going to be celebrating our independence.
Our Independence Day, yeah. For everybody else, man, I hope y'all just take off Friday.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just take off. It's fine. We're all going to take off. Let's all just take off Friday. We'll just phone it all in.
Yeah.
We'll just play sick. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Hope everybody stayed safe. Maybe filled their belly. Like we said last time, throw that diet out the window. Come on, it's summertime. Oh, I got to get my beach body. I got my beach body. My beach body's round and shades my feet.
Yeah, I'm not saying let yourself go completely, but I mean, this weekend, just give yourself a little break. I mean,
come on. A little fun, yeah.
Right?
A little fun. Hey,
guys. No matter how well you take care of yourself, at the end of your life, you're still going to die.
You're
going to
be dead.
No matter how good you take care of yourself.
Well, allegedly. I mean, we don't know what Kurzweil and all them are coming up with. We've heard about them shooting you with that fake blood that they're going to be.
Right, with the nano blood cells.
Would you do that?
Oh, sure, to have a healthier life, but I would not want to be immortal, no.
You really? I don't want you to be immortal.
This is unknown. People don't know that I actually drink 4 or 5 vampire tears every morning when I start my day. It's really taking the years off me.
And Kyle used to, when we were younger, he used to kill virgins and bathe in their blood. No, anyway. So, yeah, I don't know if I would like to do it to be healthy up until the
end.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But I don't need to live forever. Come on, man. I got other stuff I want to go check out.
Well, there's a lot of things about being immortal that people don't think of. Is like, well, all your buddies, if they're not on board with doing the same thing, all your friends are going to die off.
Well, here's what people don't think about the being immortal. It just means that the health won't kill you. It doesn't mean you won't get killed in a car wreck.
That's right.
It doesn't mean
on a long enough timeline,
yeah,
something will
Something's
kill
happen.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, so I'm not about all that. Hey, I got something cool. Before we get into this stuff, I got a quick news article I want to discuss with y'all. This comes from Engadget.com, but I believe it actually came from Perth Now over in Australia. But anyway, this is pretty cool. They actually have a robotic bricklayer now, and it looks like it's built on like a track hoe frame, but they say it can build a house in 2 days. So I'm assuming brick a home, or at least the outside. Now listen to this. It's for all modern tools and heavy machinery, of course, found on construction sites these days. One has always been decidedly manual labor. And I agree, it's been bricklaying, and they've laid it just like they claimed 6,000 years ago. Laying brick and rock is something that has to be done, of course, by hand. And, well, now there's an Australian engineer named Mark Pivick, and he's kind of changed some things up. He has developed what he claims is the world's first fully automated bricklaying robot, and he dubs Hadrian. Like the wall, okay? Now listen, it says, we're at a technological nexus where a few different technologies have got to the level where it's now possible to do this. Now this was Pivick talking to Perth Now.
Right.
He says, and that's what we've done. The system will first determine the location of every brick to be laid based on a 3D CAD design. Then individual cuts and lays the bricks in sequence. Now, Hadrian doesn't even need to move during the laying process, as its 28-foot-long boom manipulator does the dexterous work that it needs to both set the brick and, of course, butter the mortar as well. And it leaves space for pipes and wiring. Now, the machine is reportedly capable of setting 1,000 bricks an hour, roughly a home exterior frame every 2 days, or about 150 homes a year at 24 hours a day, 365 a year. Now, PIVIC hopes to further development and then market Hadrian in Western Australia before expanding, of course, to the whole country and then the whole world.
It's pretty cool, man.
Well, it's one of those things. Look, man, I'm torn. I like the idea of, all right, you know, you can get your house bricked real fast, you know, real quick, the whole thing. But also, too, it takes away human jobs. And I'm torn. I know you're going to have people advanced and people are going to have to be able to, you know, to AutoCAD or to 3D CAD design the home and upload this. And there's going to be people that have to deliver that and stock it and load it with brick and drop all that stuff off. That's great and all. I get that. But not everybody has the same opportunities to go to school and to be able to train and learn to do these things and do this. The world needs rock layers and brick layers. The world needs stonemasons. The world needs people. And also, too, it's an art form, in my opinion. I've never looked. I work construction in high school and right out of high school. And it's something that when people look down on it, when people are like, well, that's, I've got a white collar job, that's a blue collar job, or a no collar job, you've never done it. It is an artistic form to be able to do something with your hands. That people are losing. And we talk about it all the time. And I don't necessarily like this. Look, I understand if maybe under a budget, you need to get them done quick. I mean, in the rain, in the cold, yeah. In the middle of the night, it's still laying brick. I completely understand that. But also, too, I guess what this is going to do is it's the same thing as when you buy an artwork or you go get a tattoo, a free-handed tattoo, is it's going to mean more. Like when you buy something handmade, like, you know, you can get a handmade bow.
Yeah, this is a hand-bricked house.
This is one.
One day that's going to be a thing from a real estate agent.
I think
this is a hand-bricked house. You're like, wow.
I think it might be. Crazy. I really do. So anyway, it's interesting that's where our technology is going. But so it's not all going bad. We don't have killer robots as of just yet, but maybe these are going to be bricking in. These are going to be building the jail cells while the killer robots are loading us into.
Well, what I think it is that the media is actually flooding the internet with all these good PR pieces showing how good robots can be, because they know that the overwhelming idea across people is that, or the community, is that robots aren't that good.
They're not going to be that great. Yeah, you're right.
Well, check this out. Did you see this? The Huffington Post claims that NASA cut its signal to the ISS just moments after two UFOs were seen leaving the Earth.
I did read some of this.
Now, this is pretty crazy. It says, for the second time this year, a video showing what appears to be two UFOs leaving the Earth's atmosphere has caused conspiracy theorists to go into overdrive. Now, watch this real quick, Cam. You seeing that? Looks pretty crazy, right? I mean, I do admit it. I do see something.
Yes.
And you can also see the Earth, like, rotating away from you. Like, imagine you had a basketball in your hand or a soccer ball or a football. And you were just to spin it away from you. That's what the way the Earth looks like it's moving.
Yes.
So to me, is it something that's coming into focus and it's causing it to look like it's leaving the atmosphere? Or is it truly something? But I mean, I definitely see 2 to 3 objects leaving. Now, it says that this footage was reportedly captured from NASA's ISS live cam feed and shows 2 small objects. Of course, I see 3 rising out from behind the Earth's horizon. NASA then cuts the live feed for almost immediately afterwards, either to change the camera or because they had a loss of signal between the ISS and the Earth. Now, of course, conspiracy theorists are saying, no, they cut the feed intentionally because they don't want you to see what's in that footage. Now, that could be convenience. There's several people that saying, look, it's something floating in space like I was thinking. Other people are saying, no, it's definitely something flying from Earth into outer space. And then they also say that, look, the live feed from the ISS to NASA, it cuts out all the time. So it's not like it's up and running nonstop and then it just happened to cut out. The thing loses its signal all the time. So, I mean, I'm not watching the live feed, but apparently it cuts out all the time. So is it convenience or is this something really there? Now, there's also, they say, there's no way to get access to this feed now. Like, you can't go back and look at it. So it fits perfectly into anybody wanting to come up with a conspiracy theory. And this is what's driving all these conspiracy theorists crazy, is because what if it's true? What if NASA really did cut it and then remove the feed so you can't look at it anymore? Now, if you want to look at it yourself, you can go to YouTube, and the man that posted it is called Mr. Enigma. And the name of the video is UFO Mysteries, UFOs, Angels, or Biological Creatures Seen Leaving the Earth. And I'll put links to it on the website. But it's pretty cool. I mean, I definitely see what they're talking about. And it does look like something's leaving the Earth. But I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know enough about it. I mean, millions of things floating around in space. You know, I could easily say, well, that's definitely a UFO.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a UFO. It's an unidentified flying object.
That's
true. It does not mean that it's, you know, intelligently controlled.
It fits the stereotype. Yes.
Check it out, folks. It's pretty cool. Today's episode, when we get back, we're fixing to take a break. We're going to get into the Orang Pandek and some stories. We've been promising everybody that we were going to do some cryptozoological stories from different parts of the globe. And so this time we're going to be in Indonesia, Sumatra, Java, that portion of the world. And it's going to be pretty cool. I like some of the stories.
Yeah, I loved it. It's one of those things, like I said, you learn more about it, and it makes you really start thinking about stuff that we've talked about in the past. So I think it's really going to be something that y'all are going to enjoy.
Well, stay with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, folks, hope you enjoyed those news stories. We had a good time doing them. I am going to get into it right quick. Now we're going to jump in here with both feet. We told y'all earlier we were going to be discussing the Orang Pendek, and that's what it is. I'm going to give you a little rundown right quick. Let's start off with where it comes from. Now, it comes from, let's say, Sumatra. Now, that is in Southeast Asia, in the greater Sunda Islands there. And it's, you know, I believe there's it's Indonesia and there's Micronesia and all that, but it's a beautiful area. If you go and pull up some photographs of Sumatra and all around it, those island chains are amazing. And it's actually been, I would say, colonized, I believe, as early as about 500 BCE. So it's not like it was untouched forever and ever and ever. This has been one of those things. And I know that Kyle and I have even discussed that they believe that before the last ice age, when the water had receded, that it was all a giant land.
Yeah, well, and
Sunda Land, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Gunung Patong is in that area, right?
That's in the parts of Micronesia, exactly. So that they know that this island chain, of course, would be like if you'd flooded the Americas, only the higher parts would stick up, of course. So
absolutely. Sri Lanka was attached to India at that time.
Yeah.
And there was lots of land bridges.
Well, there's a little folklore that comes out of that area, and it has actually been taken extremely serious. I would say more serious than what they take the Bigfoot and the Sasquatch reports here in the States. They actually take this extremely serious.
You're 100% right. And that's what's so bizarre. It was because I never heard of this till about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And to me, of all the cases of these upright hominids, these cryptids, I think this one, the Orang Pendek, has the best chance of actually existing.
It's something that may really be there, folks. Okay, we're going to get into it. Orang Pendek is actually, it's an Indonesian term. And roughly translated, it means short person. And basically, like we say, it's the most common name that's given to what they say this hominid, this little cryptid hominid, that lives in the mountainous little forest areas there in the island of Sumatra. Now, I've talked about this in the past, and Kyle and I laughed. A few of the names of it, like Batutut, that's one of the names, Batutut, Atu, Sedapa, I believe Mawa or Malay is the names of these. And I'm sure it's like anything else. The different tribes in that area have different names for the Orang Pendek.
Absolutely.
And a little of the folklore, of course, is that there's the natives of the Sumatran Islands generally have accepted that the Orang Pendek, they believe, is a genuine animal for centuries now. It's not like it's a new thing that they've just now started talking about. It's been around forever. Now, a cool thing that they say is they believe that it is a very gentle creature. It's a very gentle forest creature, and that it only attacks the small animals for food. And they actually regard this thing with the utmost respect and tolerance, and they don't fear it. They just treat it as a basically as a mountainous little person up there. Now, like I said, in Sumatra, and actually the Taman National, Karenki, and Sablat, and that's the little bordering forest there. And the Karenki is actually a mountain in that area.
It's like a national park, yeah, right?
They've turned it all into a natural park.
It's huge.
There. It's extremely huge. Now, the Sarawak and the Kalimantan border is in central Borneo. And then, of course, presumably there's other islands in Indonesia and Malaysia that they think that actually may have these creatures on them. Now, like when I was talking to y'all about the settlers, it's allegedly been seen and documented, and we're going to get into those cases later, for at least 100 years or better by forest tribes, villagers, and the Dutch colonists. And there's been several Western scientists and people that have gone through there. And this is what they say. Among the witnesses that have all seen it, and it's all been talked about, they say the animal is ground-dwelling, which is strange whenever you hear kind of what it looks like. But they believe it's a ground-dwelling bipedal primate. And they say it stands, the reports, that it stands 2.5 to 5 feet tall. It has a human and ape-like characteristics. And they say it's strong, and it's fast and very agile. So it makes you think of a small, almost to me, like a small miniaturized version of an orangutan.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it is.
Right?
Yeah. Now, they claim it has pinkish brown skin covered by short, dark fur, and it has a mane of long hair around the face that flows down the back. So kind of like a 80s rock star hairdo of cryptids, you know, the long flowing hair and goes down his back, but then it's kind of got it around its face also. And when I think of its face, when I personally think of this, I think of like I said, the orangutan. And it's funny, the orang, they use all this. That being said, of course, the sightings claim that it walks mostly upright and that it possesses relatively short arms, but they say that it can walk upright at very fast speeds, faster than what you would think. And that it's seen several times to be sitting in or actually hugging onto trees, so that it does climb. It does get up and run around in the trees and all that, but they still say it's ground dwelling. Now, there's little footprints. This is one of their nicknames that people have given it, is Littlefoot, as we've called it Bigfoot. And they call them pint-sized footprints because they say some are about 6 inches long. They're very human-like. They're hard to distinguish lots of times from humans, except for one thing. They have a very divergent toe. And that's been, you know, kind of debated, this, that, and the other of certain primates, but this has a very divergent toe on it. And like I said, the whole thing of Littlefoot is something that I really, really like. Now, there have been similar animals historically reported throughout Sumatra and Southeast Asia. There's even recent sightings occurred largely, like I said, within the Karenki Regency there in central Sumatra, along the borders of, like we just talked about, the Taman, and they call it the Nasional Karenki Sablat, or the Karenki Sablat National Park. And the park is only 2 degrees south of the equator. So that tells you it's pretty warm, it's pretty lush. So whatever this thing is, you know, going to be used to the jungles, the hot, the jungles and things. Also, the reason it was put into this park was because of the Sumatran tiger, because it's an endangered species. It's one of the last homes for the Sumatran tiger. Now, there's a group of people there that's known as the Suku Anak Dalam, or the Orang Kubu, or the Orang Rimba. Basically, it translates into children of the inner forest. Now, these are the native areas, the native people to those areas. And they have traditionally lived in these forests of Karenki and the surrounding areas for as long as their history goes on. And like I said, the Orang Pendek has been part of their world for several hundred years. And then, of course, the outsiders have started talking about it. But this is something that they speak of all the time. Now, in fact, the Orang Kubu tribe has actually been an invaluable source to the people at Project Orang Pendek. in helping them with this broad investigation of what they're doing in the National Forest area there. And we're going to get into the Orang Pendak project in a little bit later on in the show, after we get done, of course, covering a few of the neater things in these sightings. But it's a really cool thing that these people are trying to do in this area. But anyhow, like I said, they kind of differentiate the characteristics, the physical characteristics of this Orang Pendak, pretty much from any other species or animal known, of course, to inhabit that area. Now, like I said, they describe it, the witnesses have all said it's ape or human-like. It's bipedal. The fur coloring, the southerly location, of course, on the island, they say make orangutans an unlikely explanation. So they don't believe that the orangutans have even been up in there because it's so south. Of course, it's bipedal movement, the size. There's a lot of physical characteristics say that people have tried to play it off as gibbons, a different colored gibbon. There's gibbons in that area. They're like, no, it doesn't. Gibbons don't move like this. So that's really the only apes that are known to be in that area. Now, it's been reported that they believe the Orang Pendak could represent basically a new genus of primate that's maybe not been found, or a new species, or what people are saying a subspecies of orangutan or even gibbon. So that kind of gives you an idea, a rough idea of what we're going to be dealing with this. So you got to think of a very thick jungles, rainforest style jungles. And we're going to jump in quick, and we're going to go into some of the sightings. And then when we wrap these sightings up, we'll go into some of the theories of what this thing actually is. So let's just take a step off into some of these earlier sightings.
One of the first recorded sightings of the Orang Pendak dates back to 1295, when Marco Polo visited the islands of Sumatra on one of his expeditions, and he saw the local Indonesians acting out an ape-like man in some of their dances. Now, for the next 7 centuries, sightings were well less documented, and it wasn't until 1910 that sightings became more of a regular occurrence. In 1923, a Dutch gentleman named Mr. Van Herwarden was traveling through the region. He was looking at forests to see whether the trees would potentially make good timber. Now, during his stay, he spent time tracking wild pigs, but despite seeing countless tracks in the mud, he had little luck. On one occasion, while he was crouching in the bushes waiting for the pigs, from the corner of his eye, he spotted a small, hairy creature in the tree above him. Initially, the creature did not notice him. On seeing him, the animal started shaking violently. Van Herwarden immediately recognized it as being the Orang Pendak that the villagers had spoken of so often. After some time, he tried to climb the tree to where the creature was sitting, but as he approached, the small hairy creature slid off the branch and ran away. Now, many people since then have had stories to tell of encountering the Orang Pendak.
This first story is the earliest noted sighting of this creature. A report, apparently from 1910, of an overseer of an estate who was staking out a newly acquired large tract of virgin land in the Barrison Mountains near Lubbock, Salisk. He carefully worded this statement when he wrote, "At a distance of only 15 yards, he saw a large creature low on its feet with short legs, which ran like a man and was about to cross his path. It was very hairy, and it was not an orangutan, but its face was also not like an ordinary man's. It silently and gravely gave the men and the workers with him a very disagreeable stare, and then it ran calmly away. The workers ran faster in the other direction, saying it was low on its feet as it moved." The next story is Dr. Edward Jacobson. This comes from July of 1916, a Hollander in then Dutch-controlled Indonesia. Now, he became greatly interested in this matter when camping on the slopes of Mount Kaba along the west coast mountains of Sumatra. Two hunters came with him and said they had seen a setapa, or an Orang Pendak, breaking open a falling tree at a distance of only some 20 yards from them. It was apparently looking for giant beetle larvae that live in the rotten logs. But when it realized it was being observed, it simply ran off on 2 feet. They claim it had short black hair. Now later, Dr. Jacobson was shown some tracks, or alleged footprints, of the Sedapa on Mount Kerinke in what is now the National Park. He reported that they were definitely not those of a gibbon, Saimang, or any other ape, all of which have widely opposed and very large great toe. The tracks he saw, he says, were exactly human but tiny, very broad and short.
There was also a Mr. Van Heerwarden. He became convinced, based on native sightings, that there really was some small hairy hominids in these forests, and he devoted much time to inquiries among the local hunters as to where they were frequently seen. They directed him to a specific region of the rainforest. He tells us that he was, after this, wild pig hunting in an area of forest surrounded by rivers named Palu and Rimu in October 1923. Having failed to locate a group of pigs to shoot, he went into hiding. For an hour or so, nothing happened. And then, something moving in a tree caught his attention. He says in his own words, "Then I happened by chance to look around to the left and spotted slight movement in a small tree that stood alone. By now it was time for me to be going home, for it was not advisable to journey through such country after sundown. But all the same, I was tempted out of curiosity to go and see what had caused the movement that I had noticed. What sort of animal could be in that tree? My first quick look revealed nothing, but after walking around the tree again, I discovered a dark and hairy creature on a branch. The front of its body pressed tightly against the tree. It looked as if it were trying to make itself inconspicuous and felt that it was about to be discovered. It must be Sedapa, or the Orang Pendek, I thought. Hunters will understand the excitement that possessed me. At first, I merely watched and examined the beast, which still clung motionless to the tree. While I kept my gun ready to fire, I tried to attract the Sedapa's attention by calling to it, but it would not budge. What was I to do? I could not get help to capture the beast, and time was running short. I was obliged to tackle it myself. I tried kicking the trunk of the tree, without the least result. I laid my gun on the ground and tried to get nearer to the animal. I had hardly climbed 3 or 4 feet into the tree when the body above me began to move. The creature lifted itself a little from the branch and leaned over to the side so that I could see its hair, its forehead, and a pair of eyes which stared at me. Its movements had at first been slow and cautious, but as soon as the Sedapa saw me coming, the whole situation changed. It became nervous and trembled all over its body. In order to see it better, I slid down onto the ground again. The Sedapa was also hairy on the front of its body. The color there was a little lighter than on the back. The very dark hair on its head fell to just below the shoulder blades, or even almost to the waist. It was fairly thick and shaggy. The lower part of its face seemed to end in more of a point than a man's. This brown face was almost hairless, whilst its forehead seemed to be high rather than low. Its eyebrows were the same color as its hair, and they were very bushy. The eyes were frankly moving. They were of the darkest color, very lively, much like human eyes. The nose was broad and fairly large nostrils, but in no way clumsy. It reminded me a little of a South African Negro's. Its lips were quite ordinary, but the width of its mouth was strikingly wide when open. Its canines showed clearly from time to time as its mouth twitched nervously. There seemed to be fairly large to me. At all events, they, the canines, were more developed than a man's. The incisors were regular. The color of the teeth was yellowish white. Its chin was somewhat receding. For a moment, during a quick movement, I was able to see its right ear, which was exactly like a little human ear. Its hands were slightly hairy on the back. Had it been standing, its arms would have reached to the little above its knees. They were therefore very long, but its legs seemed to be rather short. I did not see its feet, but I did see some toes, which were shaped in a very normal human manner. The specimen was of a female sex, and was about 5 feet high. There was nothing repulsive or ugly about its face, nor was it at all ape-like, although the quick, nervous movements of its eyes and mouth were very like those of a monkey in distress. I began to walk in a calm and friendly way towards the Setapa, as if I were soothing a frightened dog or a horse. But it did not make much difference when I then raised my gun to the little female. I heard a plaintive hoo-hoo, which was at once answered by similar echoes in the forest nearby. I laid down my gun and climbed into the tree again. I had almost reached the foot of the bow when the Setapa ran very fast out along the branch, which bent heavily, hung on to the end, and dropped a good 10 feet to the ground. I slid hastily back to the ground, but before I could reach my gun again, the beast was almost 30 yards away. It went on running and gave a sort of a whistle. Many people may think me childish if I say that when I saw its flying hair in the gun sights, I did not pull the trigger. I suddenly felt that I was going to commit murder. I lifted my gun to my shoulder again, but once more my courage failed me. As far as I could see, its feet were broad and short, but the native legend that the Setapa runs with its heels foremost is quite untrue.
A couple other stories come from early 2000 from a farmer in the area named Tono. He says, I was very close to it. Its body was big and muscular, but it was short, about only 90 centimeters tall. It started to run, but then it fell down. This gave me time to see it better. Its arms were hairy, its face was hairy, its ears were huge. It struggled and got up and ran away. There was also a farmer there named Two. Had another sighting, says its hands were very wide and spread apart fingers like a human's hands. And its body was shaped like a human's body. And it moved very low on two legs, creeping as if trying to slip deliberately by her, or being very stealthily. I tell you those to get into this. Miss Debbie Martyr, a prominent Orang Pendak researcher, who worked in that area for over 15 years and has interviewed hundreds of witnesses, has seen one herself. Those stories come from a couple of collections she had. Now, she says that they're usually no more than 85 or 90 centimeters in height, and although occasionally as large as a meter and 20 centimeters, says the body's covered in a coat of dark gray or black flecked with gray hair. It's the sheer physical power of the Orang Pendak that impresses the villagers. She says they speak in awe of its broad shoulders and huge chest, upper abdomen, and powerful arms. They say the animal is so strong that it can easily uproot small trees and even break rattan vines. But the legs, in comparison, are short and slim, and the feet very small, and usually turned out of an angle of 45 degrees. They say the head slopes back to a distinct crest, similar to that of a gorilla, and there appears to be a bony ridge above the eyes, but the mouth is small and neat. The eyes are set wide apart, and the nose is distinctly humanoid. When frightened, the animal exposes its teeth, revealing oddly broad incisors and very prominent, long canine teeth. But she herself had a sighting. This took place in 1994. She says, when I saw an animal that didn't look like anything in any of the books I had read, any of the films I had seen, or the zoos I had visited. It did indeed walk rather like a person, and that was a shock. And it looked relatively small, but immensely strong for a non-human primate. But she says it was very graceful, which was very odd. She said if you looked at the animal, you might think it resembled an agile gibbon, but on steroids. It doesn't look like an orangutan. Their proportions are very different. It's built like a boxer with immense upper body strength. But why an animal with immense upper body strength should be lumbering around on the ground, she says, I don't know, it makes no sense. She says it was gorgeous in color, moving bipedally and trying to avoid being seen. Now I knew there was something in the vicinity before I saw it because the action of the birds and the primates in the area meant there was obviously something moving around. So I sent a guide around as far as I could to where the disturbance was. Whatever was concealed in the undergrowth would try to avoid my guide and hopefully move away from him. I was concealed looking down on a small, shallow valley. We didn't know what we were going to see. And it could have been a sun bear, it could have been a tiger, could have been a golden cat, it could have been anything. But instead, a bipedal, non-human primate walked down the path ahead. It was concentrating so hard on avoiding my guide, it didn't look towards me. I had a camera in my hand at the time, but I dropped it. I was so shocked. I just froze up for a minute, trying to identify something I hadn't seen before. I don't believe in the abominable snowman, she says. My father was in Tibet and saw what he was told were Yeti tracks, and they turned out to be bear footprints. They were just too big. She said, I think a 3 meter tall, 10 foot apes are too big. Now, maybe there have been an exaggeration through fear. I don't believe in things like Bigfoot. The Yeren in China might exist. Orangutans lived in China in the Pleistocene. It could be a speculation in the orangutan. The forest of Assam might be a good place to look as well. But she does now believe in the Orang Pendek. These are a couple of sightings that Debbie herself actually collected. This comes from a 32-year-old man, lived in the Palampet area, gave this report to Debbie around 1989. Said, I was in my grandfather's house, which was a bamboo-walled hut in one of his fields. I looked out and I saw two Orang Pendek. One was bigger than the other, and they were eating sugar cane. I then went out to examine them a little more closely, and the big one noticed me, turned, and they both ran away. And they ran away just like a man, but very fast. Now, Debbie, of course, questioned this witness a little bit further to find out that he says that they looked like a small, hairy human. But not quite human, but also not like a monkey. So Debbie asked, admittedly, if they thought it was a sun bear or a gibbon. Villa said, no, nothing even like those creatures at all. In the same village, there was a second informant, an elderly fellow there, who said he had seen an Orang Pendek. And he actually got up and acted out for Debbie how the gibbons act in the sugar cane versus how the Orang Pendek act. He said the Orang Pendek walks like a man. It is not a monkey.
In both 2003 and again in 2004, the English cryptozoologist Richard Freeman traveled to the same part of Sumatra, specifically to investigate the Orang Pendek, plus other rare creatures. Now, during his field trip, Mr. Freeman used the famous and skillful guide by the name of Sahar. In the 1980s, Sahar's father and friend had been cutting logs to build a house close to where the village of Palampek now stands. The area now has long been deforested. Both men saw a bipedal ape lifting up cut logs and throwing them about. It was covered in a blackish-brown hair and was about 5 feet tall. The hair on the creature's spine was darker, its legs were short, and its powerful arms were long. The face was broad and black in color, with some pink markings. Both men fled from the Orang Pendek. Now, during Richard Freeman's 2004 expedition, his field trip to Sumatra, he met with a number of local villagers from different areas, and he talked to some of them, and some of them gave him some interesting stories. One of them, who had been a poacher, hence his resistance to talk to us, said that he had snared a deer illegally in the jungle apparently this took place in 2003, and he was beginning to check his snares, he discovered that one of them had caught a strange ape-like creature. It was about 1 meter in height. It was covered with black hair and was powerfully built. Now panicking, he tried to jab at the creature with his spear. The ape then snatched the spear from him and snapped it in two like a matchstick. It then let out a deafening bellow. That scared the man so much that he passed out. Upon waking, he saw that the beast had freed itself and was walking off through the jungle. Unsurprisingly, he gave up poaching, he claims, ever since that day. Now, Richard Freeman spoke to another witness, this time a middle-aged man living in the area named Seaman. He saw an orangutan near a river at midday in February of 2004. Now, this area of bush near his garden was so overgrown that he could only see the orangutan from the waist up. He estimated it to only be 80 centimeters tall. But Freeman thinks that the height witness indicated by his hand is probably more like 1 meter. He said that the animal had short black hair. It had a broad chest with pink skin visible on it. And it had a pointed head. Its ears were long. Now, this was all that he was able to get from this witness. But it is interesting that all of these villagers and people in the area keep seeing this beast.
Richard Freeman interviewed another witness who had seen the orangutan. His name was Atta, and he was in his 20s. He had seen the creature about 3 weeks after Seaman's sighting. Atta says he heard a strange cry coming from the same area of the gardens where Seaman had his encounter. The noises began about 10 a.m. They were a loud, "Ooh-ha, ooh-ha" sound. Upon investigating, Atta found himself only 5 meters from a strange beast. It was about 1 meter tall and had short black hair. Its prominent chest made him think it was a female. Its lower half was hidden by vegetation. He noticed that it had large owl-like eyes, a flat nose, and a large wide mouth. It seemed aggressive, and Atta said he felt the hair on the back of his hands and arms rise up from fear. Atta produced a drawing of a muscular upright creature with large round eyes. It lacked the pointed head of Seaman's descriptions. But later, another man said that a friend of his had found what he believed to be orangutan footprints in his cornfield on 3 separate occasions. Now, luckily for us, Freeman did a little more investigating and spoke to a local guide there in the Lost Valley named Pack Inn. He told them that he had seen an orangutan in the jungle just above the Hidden Valley 3 years ago. Now, he himself was walking along a jungle trail when he saw it approaching. It was 1 meter tall, upright, and powerfully built. It had black hair with red tips and a broad mouth. Its prominent breast made Pack Inn think it was a female. He noticed that it grasped vegetation as it moved. It let out an ooh-ha, ooh-ha sound. And he was watching it as it moved down the trail for a couple of minutes before it saw him. And on seeing Pack End, it quickly turned about and walked back the way it came. Now later, when the exploration party came to the exact area of the trail to where Pack End had said he had seen it earlier, he physically imitated the way it walked, touching and grabbing vegetation with her hands as she was walking down the trail. And he said she was very muscular, like the American boxer Mike Tyson, is what he said. And a member of Mr. Freeman's crew actually filmed the whole performance of the guide's imitation of how the orangutan walked.
Now later, Mr. Freeman traveled to another portion of the Sumatran island named Jambi Province, some distance away by car, to visit the Kubu people. And while they were there, they met with a headman named Nilam. Now Nilam had also seen an orangutan in this area only 3 months ago, during the year 2004. Now the witness had been up a tree at the time. The orangutan was 1.25 meters tall, he estimates, and was covered with a red-tinted black hair. It had a broad mouth. It walked upright and held its arms like a man. Now he says that it made a weep, weep noise and looked about itself as if it could smell its observer in the tree. Now, Nilum watched it for over a half hour, and he could only see that it slowly slipped into the vegetation.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It ain't hard to tell to rock well. It ain't hard to tell to rock well. It ain't hard to tell to rock well.
All right, guys, I hope y'all all enjoyed the Orang Pendak. We tried a little something new where it was just Kyle and I going with the sightings, and we wanted to discuss everything like we would if you were to, all of us to be sitting around. We're going to discuss what we just talked about on all these little sighting things. And, man,
it's pretty interesting. I mean, I love the Orang Pendak stories because, to me, not just the region of the world that it's in, you know, much like Jurassic Park. I mean, it's like an indigenous area. It's not very well developed. This is the same place where people see the Indava bird or the Ropin. And, you know, it's very likely that it's just a different type of ape. That's what I think. I mean, from all the descriptions, they're very similar. They always talk about it being small.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its footprints look like it has an opposable thumb like a monkey has, or an ape, I'm sorry. It's always seen as black hair with red tips. Mm-hmm. Very common with orangutans, you know, and these people have been seeing it for a long time. Could it be just a very small pocket of these types of apes? I mean, just like we talk about all the time, and this is something that I always bring up. I know that mountain lions are real. I 100% know that they're real. Mm-hmm. They're in the county that I live in. I've been in the woods countless times. I'm 38 years old. I've never seen one in the wild.
Yes.
Ever.
Yes.
So now you're talking about a area of the world that's not very well populated. To me, it's very conceivable that there could be a new type of ape that's undiscovered by man that's living in the jungles. I mean, we catch new creatures all the time. And I was just reading an article just the other day about a guy that just spotted a new species of shark that's never been discovered before.
Wow.
I mean, this happens.
Yeah.
And the indigenous people, they're not shocked at all by this.
No.
They're like, yeah, we've always seen stuff like that. So, to me, I almost don't classify it as being like Sasquatch. It's almost, to me, just like it's another animal. I don't know why I draw that line, but it's just like, no, to me, it just seems like it's another type of ape. But then again, isn't that what Sasquatch could be?
Yeah. I think it's the reason you're qualifying it or classifying it like that yourself is much like the same reason it's hard for me to not want to say it's nothing like a cryptid, because it's not big. Something about
the size.
The size makes it easier to believe it's an ape than it is a small. Although this is the area of Homo floresiensis, this is the area of the
exactly.
Hobbits.
Now, for people who don't know, that is a small hominid that they know existed in that area of the world, and they discovered this thing when, like, in 2004 or something.
Yeah, I can't really remember right
the exact
off the top
year
of my
they
head.
Found it, but you know they know that that's real, and also.
And it lived 13,000 years ago. They know that that was the most recent bones that they had found, and that there are still stories of the little people told in that area by the native peoples. So this isn't something that's, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Now, I understand there are some people, and I know it's hard to wrap your head around the fact of a 7 to 9 foot tall ape in North America. But if you were 3 foot tall, a meter, you're a meter high. It's pretty easy to hide when you're small.
The Homo floresiensis, they said, is 3.5 foot tall, and it was discovered in 2003.
Okay.
And they know that they have the skeletal remains of this. I mean, that's everybody's big turning point is, well, where's the skeletal remains? They have it.
They have it of that.
The people that live there now, there's pygmies that live in that area.
Yes.
These are real people.
Yes.
So maybe this isn't an ape, like I was saying earlier. Maybe it is just a really wild pygmy.
Well, we have
imagine
no idea.
The hair, dreadlocks, I'm picturing. Living in the woods. I mean, if you don't get a real good look at it, it could be just a pygmy, a wild pygmy.
Well, you know, they're finding out now where they believe that the dinosaurs were covered in feathers.
Yes, they seem a lot more than what we thought originally.
We don't know what these hobbits look like. We have no idea.
Well,
now, granted, now listen, I'm not saying that this is what it is, because if you think about the build of what's being reported in these sightings, they talk about being very broad-chested and things. These remains of the hobbits that they found aren't built like that. They're not anatomically short-legged, big broad chest. They don't look like that. And let's not get saying that's what it is. They don't look anything like that. It looks completely different. They look like a very, very small human being. But I think what I keep going back to is the color's the same. The facial features are the same. It walks the same. And why on earth would anybody in those areas, now I know it's not all going to be legit, but why on earth would old sugarcane farmers want to lie to people about what they saw? What good would it do?
It wouldn't.
I mean, if you were asked a question now about a white-tailed deer from somebody that had never seen one, why would you not go, yeah, man, I've seen one. I've seen a lot of them. Why wouldn't you, you know, why would you go make up this big elusive story over something that you'd never seen before? I mean, it's like lying about seeing Bigfoot or lying about seeing anything. If you're not making money off of it, and I understand making money off of it is a whole different thing. People, when money gets involved, people start getting a little crazy, a little shady, start getting a little out of control. But with this, I don't, of course, like I said, I don't know these people. I don't know enough about their culture to probably really make the statement saying that they wouldn't, because human nature is always looking out for one another, trying to make a little money off of somebody. That's just the way it is. But I'm looking at this as the natives talking about for the last couple hundred years, this has been talked about. It's been seen for over 100 years. There's very good reports of it. And those reports haven't changed, much like the Sasquatch reports. They all come back the same. So is this a true animal, or is this one of those things that maybe it's not real flesh and blood, maybe it's in between? I have a feeling like it's another primate. It's another type of ape that we don't know, like the bonobo.
Right.
You know, it's something along those.
I'm picturing,
but the fact that it walks upright is creepy as hell.
Well, and I'm picturing a hybrid. Like it's perhaps half Homo floresiensis and half orangutan. I mean, you know, another hominid that we're just as unknown to man. I mean, there's offshoots everywhere. Maybe that's an undiscovered one. The same thing I think that possibly Sasquatch could be an offshoot of something over here in North America, whether it's Homo erectus or Neanderthals.
We just don't know enough about them.
We don't know enough. But to me, also, though, I will say, it's easy to make up crazy stories about places that are uninhabited. You know why? Because there's no one there to call BS on it. You know what I'm saying?
So I know exactly
if
what
that's
you
a
mean.
Closed off forest, say over here, it's high fenced and no one can go in there. Well, I can make up whatever story I want to. You can't go into the story to back into that forest, I'm sorry, to back up my claims.
Yes.
No one has access to it.
Yes.
There's a lot of places in the world that I think things like that happen. You know, like in Antarctica. There's always these crazy stories about Antarctica. Why? Because there's no one there.
Or Area 51.
Area 51. Right. Another place you can't get into.
Yes.
Because if I make something that I saw or something that's bizarre there in Central Park, well, guess what? There's tens of thousands of people that go there all the time. You could walk there right there tomorrow and say, no, nah, there's no way you saw that.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, you know, maybe it's a case of that. But these cases have been coming around. I mean, Marco Polo, sightings from 1910, 1923. I mean, what would cause these people to make up these stories like you're talking about all the way back in 1923, even the 1800s? People that were hunters, people that were biologists, people that were cryptozoologists, along with the natives, corroborating stories, farmers, all seeing the same thing.
Yes.
Now, there's been numerous attempts by a few people to go there. They've been working with these projects you were mentioning where they actually are going out. They're setting up trail cams. They're taking casts of footprints that they've found. And they've even found hair samples, I believe. And they've had some of those looked at. And I don't think there's been a whole lot of evidence, but I do think that some of the scientists have looked at this information and say that, well, they definitely think that it looks like it's a blend of creatures, whether it's a gibbon, an orangutan, a chimpanzee,
yeah,
even partially human. They know from the footprints that it's nothing that they've seen before. So just from those casts, they can tell it's nothing. It's not a known animal, in other words. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the hare. So of all the cryptids, you know, and also in that area, I have to mention that the rock apes of Vietnam, Laos, Thailand. Well, you know, before there was natural land bridges, these animals could have came down. The urine, which exactly. lives in China. Maybe this is an offshoot of the rock ape, the urine, the orang pendek.
Well, and we already know that in that area that they're using the camera traps to look for Sumatran tigers.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that this area is, I would say, remote, if rough enough to keep an endangered species of less than 500. I mean, the Sumatran tiger, and there's exactly. less than 500 of them left. So we know that this area is remote enough that that's where they've kind of receded to. Also, too, though, but that, see, me even saying that right now, right as we're just doing this recording, has made me think right then, this animal can't be ground dwelling. If there's 500 Sumatran tigers in this endangered area, you don't want to sleep on the ground as a primate.
No.
You want to be in the
bullet
trees.
Bullet ants and everything else walking around.
Right?
No, the trees is where you want
you
to
You don't
live.
Want to do that. So maybe they're wrong. Maybe they claim that they've seen them on the ground, but maybe they really don't. So maybe it is an ape. They claim they've seen them sitting in trees, hugging trees. It sounds like they're built for trees. When you look at an ape, any ape, chimps, anything, when you look at that, they always have strong upper bodies, large chests, arms, but not really developed legs as far as like our legs, because they spend more of their time in the trees. And then when they are on the ground, they're sitting.
Yeah, they're not running around.
Which sounds a lot like the orang pendek. It sounds like an ape. It almost sounds like a breed between, say, a chimp and an orangutan is almost what it sounds like.
So it seems like to me, yeah.
It really does. Either way, it's a fascinating, fascinating thing, because people are really, in that country, are really trying to study it and try to figure out what they've got there.
Yeah, I'm interested. I hope they find some stuff out. That'd be really,
me
really
too.
Cool.
Me too.
Wow, man. What a cool show.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I mean,
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I didn't know as much about the orang pendek before I heard that. I hope everybody enjoyed this. I learned a lot. I read a lot that we didn't include on the show. Fascinating stuff. But real quick, now we've been mentioning it for a while and we keep forgetting to do it. We'd like to give some shout outs.
Yes.
We really appreciate the people that take the time to rate and review the show for us. It helps us out when people are searching for new podcast. The only unfortunate part is it's not done on one database. It's done separated by country. I've
yes.
mentioned this before. It's annoying. But I'd like to get some shout-outs, and I'm going to start first with the United Kingdom. I'd like to shout-out Andy Rue, 1969. Thank you so much. Marlin 86 Brando. Thank you very much. BF1828. Thank you. Sasqueeches. Thank you very much. And Fury 71. Thank you so much. Moving on to our friends in Australia, half shark, alligator, half man. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Matteo Vincenzo, our friend Chris Copeland, and Annie Lisa. Thank you so, so much. Cam, what do you got going on in the United States?
I've got a pile of them. They've been working hard over here. I've got Andy, 11-1176, Martin, 1053, Ant, 00007. Tyler Trott, Patrick Berry 2000, AJ and me, TGIF 50, I got Aaron T Man, Louis Vega 23, Zach Warner, KS Studios. This one was pretty special to me. Not like all of them aren't special. Thank y'all all so very, very much for writing those. I've got a few more here. Migladoon, Waymore Blues, Michael KTJ, Cat 519, John Hunt Morgan, Decaf, St. Francis of Assisi, and JMZ 107. Thank y'all very, very much. And Migladoon, that was some very, very kind words. Sounds like your dad would have been an awesome guy. We'd have liked to have chatted with that fella too, man. It's pretty cool to have a library like that to dig through. Folks, all BS aside, man, thank y'all so very much for
absolutely.
Writing those.
Thank you so much. It helps out tremendously.
It helps out, but I'm going to tell you something about, I'll let you in on a little bit of this. If I'm having a bad day, work's got me down, you know, just life. Everybody has a day where they wake up that they're not quite 100%. you might be a little bummed out. Something may have not gone the way you wanted it to. Things are working, and you know, we stay up late, and Kyle's worked an insane amount of hours this week already, working till midnight just the other night, trying to get everything done, not just for his show. This is for the job, and we've been working a lot. And sometimes we get down, man, and we love doing the podcast, but sometimes it's difficult, no lie. And when you go on here and you read these reviews, it makes it all go away.
Right.
It makes me have a way better day. And for that, I want to thank everybody. Everybody Absolutely. That sends us messages, everybody that sends us emails, everybody that tweets us, any of that stuff, man, it really does go a long way. Whether or not it doesn't matter what it helps me and Kyle. It just helps us. It reaffirms what we're doing is getting out there and people are enjoying it. And for that, I can't thank y'all enough. I really can't. So I'm going to beg y'all a little bit more. Here in the U.S., any country you're in, please, if you haven't already, rate the show. And if you would like to write a review, we would love to read it. Please, rating and reviews is awesome. We are sitting at 171 ratings. We are trying
to
make
US.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
In the U.S. alone, we're trying to make the push to 200. We're trying to hit 200 before our 2-year mark.
This is like
in
the
September.
Telethon that you see, like it's, a public
that's
broadcasting.
That's exactly right.
There's a bunch of people
really
sitting
like
behind
to
me
get
with telephones ringing. You
You're
can see
right.
the answer. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I would really like to get there. And if not, it's no harm, no foul. It's not going to change anything. Just something I would personally like to do.
Now, I know there's also people that have written reviews in other countries. You have to search them one by one. I don't have time to go through every country.
If you have.
I know that there's people that we've mentioned before from Canada and Ireland and places like that, Sweden even. And there are people that listen all over the world. I'm sorry if I didn't mention your name, but... Email us
yeah. or message us somehow.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Let us know.
Let us know that you wrote a review. Yeah, that's awesome.
If you sent one and we haven't got it out, email us. Send a message on Twitter. Send us a message on Facebook. However you can get in touch with us some way out there. Email the call the show. Whatever you got to do, let us know that you did it. We'll be glad to mention you and thank you about the whole thing. It's overwhelming. Just the response for this show has been overwhelming. We've been at it not quite 2 years. And it's slammed us. I mean, this is one of those things that, I mean, there's so much love. It's unbelievable. So thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode because we had a great time doing it. We really did. We learned a lot. That's what I love the most about this is the stuff that I learn. I'm kind of selfish. It's the stuff that you and I dig in and research because we want to know more about it. And then I end up learning more about it.
Absolutely. And thanks for calling in. Thanks, Stephen, for that shout out you gave us that we played during the break. If you would like to call in and tell others why you like Expanded Perspectives, you can call us. Or you just want to call and share your experience or your story or your thoughts, guest ideas, whatever. You can call the show 817-945-3828. You can also always email us stories, your ideas, whatever you like, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Once again, don't forget you can sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. That's on there, man.
It's all
share,
on there. Yeah.
You know, if you like the shows, share them on your Facebook, share them on your Twitter. Let everybody else know that you like what we're doing over here. We appreciate it so much.
Yeah.
Everybody have a good work week. Don't work too hard this week. If you're living in the United States, July 4th is coming up. Make sure if your kids are running around the pool or the lake or whatever, make sure they got a life vest on.
Keep an eye on them.
Keep an eye on them. Every year you see these tragedies where somebody drowned in the pool or whatever because people weren't paying attention. And it only takes a second.
You're exactly right.
Even if there's no water, watch out if they're near a road. Just watch the little ones have fun. Please be careful with the fireworks. Don't set somebody else's house on fire.
Don't burn
anything
down.
I mean, just be careful. Please don't make homemade fireworks.
Right?
I mean, buy the cheap Chinese ones. They're good enough. If you're lucky to live in an area like we are where you can shoot your own fireworks. If not, you're going to watch an awesome firework display. Have fun.
And I want to say something else, too, folks, and I don't think it can be stated enough. I'm sitting here right now, and Kyle and I are both having a drink. We're having an adult beverage, having us a beer right now. Mm. If you're going out for the 4th here in the States or anywhere like that, get somebody to drive you around.
Be careful.
Especially on the lake, too.
Uber.
The lake's just like a car. Don't get in a boat. Don't be power drinking and whatnot. The last thing you want to do is run over somebody. I had a real good friend of mine that right out of high school, I wasn't right out of high school. He was a young man that I had known and watched him grow up, and he ended up getting killed on the river because somebody hit him with a boat. So it was a terrible accident. That's all it was an accident. But these are things that can be avoided. So let's just make sure, let's do all we can to avoid and take care of one another so we can all make it through to the next week and have a little more fun. That's the whole thing. Other than that, give somebody a hug. Give somebody some love. Buy somebody some fireworks, some little kid. Give some kids some sparklers. You don't like sparklers and snakes, man. There's something wrong with you.
You don't like smoke bombs?
That's right.
Right?
I like that chicken that you light on fire and it shoots out of its butt and it takes off. Yeah, that thing's
that's
awesome.
Awesome. Well, we love each and every one of you. Thank you so much. Be careful, and we'll talk to you for you elite members on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Stay out of trouble, folks. Peace.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.